Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We are live from the City of Angels right here, Los Angeles, California. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host on this Saturday night, Jimmy Church, the fill-in guy on this Easter weekend. Yes, we are broadcasting from the Coast to Coast World Headquarters. That's right, the Command Center. And you know the drill. It's Saturday night. The studio is dark. And tonight, we're going to go on another adventure, another journey. My favorite thing about late night overnight talk radio is that I get to learn something. I get a little smarter. And I get to take that Coast family right along with me for the ride. And tonight, I promise, as always, it's going to be one of those nights. Because our guests tonight are Tricia McCannon and the one and only Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. This is Easter weekend, and it's an important time for most, and I get that. And I wanted to explore some of the questions that I've had for a very long time. First, what is up with the missing years of Jesus? You know, what we've got the origins covered pretty well. And we've got a gap after the age of 12, 13, you know, and then after Easter, right? These are big major questions for me. I want to get these answered. And also, Mary Magdalene. Well, Tricia McCannon has been researching and writing about this for a very, very long time, and she is just the person to ask. And later on, we're going to be taking your calls, and you can jump right on in into the conversation. Then, for me, there's the big questions about ET and alien contact in the Bible and throughout religions all over the world. And, of course, how the 21st century looks at Jesus and the UFO connection. The Reverend Michael J.S. Carter is one of my favorite guests. He's been on with me so many times, and he really, really has a grip. And we're going to explore all of this, and we will also take your calls and more. It's going to be a great evening, and you just need to get comfortable. You need to turn down the lights, pull up your blankie, get a drink, get ready. And don't forget, you can follow me right now on Twitter. Twitter is live to my left, and I get it all night long. Follow me right now at JChurchRadio. Any questions or comments live during the show, I read them all. Seriously. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in on this Easter weekend, and this is Coast to Coast AM. All right. Welcome back to Coast AM. Yeah, it's me, Jimmy Church, sitting in on this Easter weekend. George will be back on Monday. And I'm really looking forward to tonight's show. It's Easter weekend, and once in a while, you know, I get to dive into religion. I don't do it that often. And we all have questions. So this is what I decided to do with the show tonight, because it's Saturday night and I'm running things here at Coast to Coast. This is what I want to do. We have two great guests tonight. We have Tricia McCannon, and later on we have the good Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. So we're going to do the first hour tonight with Tricia, and then we're going to immediately jump into calls, because just like I have questions, so do you. So let's just have fun. Join in on the conversation tonight with Tricia. She's one of the brightest, smartest researchers that I know. She's a clairvoyant, a historian. She's an author, a teacher. She has traveled the world in search of answers to the greatest mysteries of the ages. As a dedicated researcher and mystical symbologist in many ancient paths of wisdom, she is known as the Mysteries Expert. She is trained as an initiate of many ancient streams of knowledge, including mystical Christianity, Native American wisdom, the Shabda teachings of the Masters of the Far East, and all of the Goddess teachings. She is the author of Dialogues with the Angels, Jesus, the Explosive Story of the Last 30 Years, The Return of the Divine Sophia, Healing the Earth Through the Lost Wisdom Teachings of Jesus, Isis, and Mary Magdalena. I would like to welcome to Coast to Coast, back to Coast to Coast, Tricia McCannon. Tricia, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Jimmy. What a pleasure to be with you guys tonight on Easter of all days.
Yes, you know, and I'm so excited. And, you know, when we were laying out the weekend shows here, and I just thought, you know what, there's really only two people that I want to do on Easter weekend, and that's Tricia and the good Reverend. Let's do this. And we put this together, and I'm just very excited because the Coast audience and audiences with late night overnight radio like this, they're here to learn. You know, that's what they're here for. And let's have fun with this tonight because you research, you write, and I use you. I don't want to, I want to say this in the correct way, Tricia. I use you because I'm a sponge. And if I do that, so does the audience. And that's exactly what I want to do tonight. So let's do this. And the first question that I have for you, though, this is Easter, right? What is it? What is Easter, Tricia?
Gosh, wow. Great question. Great way to start off, Jimmy. Well, Easter actually, as we all know, we've grown up with it as a Christian holiday. And certainly there is a whole Christian aspect to it, which I'm going to speak about in just a second. But it goes back to an even more ancient holiday to the goddess Astara. Astara is the goddess of the cosmic egg. And, of course, we're all living in the cosmic egg. And when we start talking about the cosmology or the mythology or the theology of the cosmic egg, it's a big conversation because for, gosh, tens of thousands of years, mystics and clairvoyants and sages have talked about when we go back beyond, let's just say, the third dimension and up into the fourth dimension and the fifth and the sixth and the seventh, all the seven lower dimensions, when we go back to the beginning of everything, which scientists call the Big Bang, what was it before that? And what they say it was the cosmic egg that was floating on the cosmic ocean, or the plenum, as it used to be called. Well, of course, theoretical physicists like Michio Kaku talk about the space foam of matter. Brian Greene, another physicist, talks about this. And this is actually what they think predated time and space. And in Hindu teachings, they talk about the divine father and mother that live inside the cosmic egg. And, you know, they sort of sleep in there. And when a day of God happens and the divine breathes out its breath into the cosmos, the in-breath and the out-breath, during the out-breath or the involution, the whole universe comes into being, and trillions of beings are created like us. And the Hindu teachings talk about the fact that the God behind everything, even behind the Divine Father and Mother, is what they call Saguna Brahman, not Brahma, Brahman. It's really like the being behind it all. The Hebrews would call it the An, A-I-N, or the unknowable. And that unknowable is the one divine intelligence that permeates everything. And that there are all these cosmic eggs kind of floating on the cosmic ocean, which if you think about it, when you look at the galaxies we think of them as being flat plates or spiral plates, which they are. But at a bigger level, when we look at the photographs of the red shift of the galaxies, they look like big old eggs, literally cosmic eggs. And the ancient teachings talk about the fact that every egg, or let us say maybe the galaxies that are bobbing up and down in the time-space plenum out there, the great cosmos that all these galaxies are in, each galaxy has its own divine mother and father who are emanations of the One. And they're kind of like the overseeing divinities or energies that make sure that our creation is blessed, that oversee the cosmic laws of our creation. And that would include all the seven dimensions. It would include, you know, everything in our galaxy, if the galaxy is in fact the egg itself. And when you think about, consciousness, the way that the ancients saw it unfold was that the egg opens and becomes a lotus blossom on this sea, on this plenum.
You know, what's interesting about that, and I do want to jump into Jesus and the baby Jesus here in just a second, but I remember when I was much, much, much younger, somebody saying to me, you know, Easter is has nothing to do with what you think. It's a pagan holiday. And just like messed with my head and at a very, very young age.
Yes, and understandable. I mean, we can't quite figure out what bunny rabbits, which are symbols of fertility, have to do with the crucifixion.
Right, right.
Yes.
I don't want to make light of it, but yeah, that was always a head scratcher for me too as well. And
yeah, but if you think about it, really, I mean, Jesus was an expression of the divine Father energy in the divine Son. And, you know, there's the Father, the Mother, there's the divine Daughter and the divine Son. We've forgotten all about the Daughter. We'll get into Mary Magdalene, I'm sure, later. But with Jesus, the expression of the divine Son that comes into the world, you know, we're so ignorant down here. We keep killing off these incredibly phenomenal avatars. They come down, they bring their message. We, you know, murder them because it doesn't go along with the powers that be, like to run the world, the secular powers. And, you know, afterwards, of course, they build religions to them, and then they kind of control the masses many times through however they want to interpret those messages. And, I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of profound people who've entered into the true meaning of the message of Jesus. And that message is eternal life. And that's what the resurrection's about, is that we have mortal bodies, we die, we come down here, we age, we get sick, all these terrible calamities appear to happen to us. But guess what? We're all immortal. And the question becomes, how do we awaken to our immortality or our divinity or the part of us that is not mortal, the part that, you know, not the little ego, not the little self? How do we awaken to the soul self? How do we awaken to the divine self that lives within?
Well, certainly, I guess we could do that with Easter baskets and chocolate bunnies.
Well, yes. I mean, actually, you know, the thing about Easter is it's fun. Spring has sprung. The grass is risen.
Right.
Birdies is.
That's right.
And it's fun. It's joyous. It's the rebirth of life.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
The birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the moon up above and a thing called love.
Now, I want to jump straight to, because we have so much to go over tonight, I want to get to, your reference is the missing 30 years. And certainly we have that, the age of 12 to the age of 30, we have that 18-year gap that is missing from the Bible itself proper. But yours is the missing 30 years. So does that... is that another 12 years that is after the resurrection?
No. Let me just say that the life of Jesus is actually a very long and complex one, and we know part of it. In the Bible, we basically have the story of the beautiful birth and the nativity in Bethlehem and you know, the mysterious star that who knows if it was a UFO or who knows if it was a, you know, an angelic sign or who knows if it was the astrological configuration. I talk about all of these things actually in my book. And I also talk about when was Jesus really born. And I look at four really powerful dates where, and two of them actually are on December 25th. And one I think is, I think we spoke about this the other night, one of them is it towards the end of July, which would make him a Leo. That was a very important thing that was happening with the Magi following certain astrological conjunctions. And then in Libra, on your birthday, on October the 10th, that's another time that there's a great cosmological significance of conjunctions that are happening in the heavens. So we know this time. So then it moves forward, really, to where he's 12 years old, he's coming down from Galilee in the north, to Jerusalem. He's being bar mitzvahed. They go to the temple. This is why when he impresses all the priests and the rabbis, and then the family leaves, and then they turn around and realize he's he's not there, and they go back and get him at the temple. So the next time we hear about him, he's 30 years old. He's coming, listening to John the Baptist, and goes through the anointing with a white dove of the Holy Spirit. The peace comes over him. He's ordained, and he's blessed. And the prophecy happens that, you know, this is my son in whom I'm well pleased. And he begins his ministry. And John then begins to step back. And then, according to the Gospels, he has 3 years of his ministry. And then the crucifixion, and he dies. So that's the story we know. And all that's true. However, a couple of changes in there. Jesus was not just an initiate of, you know, the Jewish path. And at that time, there were three aspects of the Jewish path. The Essenes, which he was a member of, the Essenes that later became and morphed into the early Christians or the Gnostics. But he was also an initiate of the Druid path in England. His uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, had a fleet of ships and went back and forth between Jerusalem and Cornwall, where he had the largest 10 mines in the whole area, and 10 was essential to the Romans in the creation of bronze. And so he actually had a big honorary title called a decurion. So Joseph was a rich man, he was a powerful man, he was an influential man, and he was also an Essene, and of course totally supportive of his nephew's mission role in education. So Jesus was, after the Holy Family went to Egypt, they came back from Egypt at about when he was about 7. He and his mother and Joseph of Arimathea went up to the Cornish coast. They probably spent 6 months there, a year, something like that. Then he was back by the time he was 8, where he went into study with the Essenes in the school of Mount Carmel. That's also where John the Baptist was taught, which was up in Galilee. And as you may or may not remember, there was a big holy cave that Elijah used to spend time in. So this is why the school was established there. It was a very important mountain going back to the time of the Anunnaki gods and ancient Samaria and that whole time, and then coming to Jesus' time. So after that, he was sent, when he was about 13, to England once again. And he studied for either 1 year or 2 years there. But, you know, that was very much a verbal teaching culture, not so much a written culture. They had, you know, the Ogham script, which was the tree script for the ancient Druid priest, but it was a oral culture. He was so advanced that they said, send him on to India. So then he went to India. Probably he would have been there by the time he was 15. And maybe even late 14, something like that. And he was there for many years, studied with the Brahmins, was teaching, when he graduated, he was teaching his own thing. This was probably about the time he was 20, 21. And he taught everybody. Within a few weeks, he had 3,000 to 5,000 followers. And, of course, just like in Judea, he was kind of upsetting the powers that be, that were very invested in the caste system. And, you know, the caste system was like the Brahmins held all the spiritual knowledge. They brought it out, whatever, 6 times a year. Then you had the nobility, you had the merchants, and they got to come and hear the ceremonies and things written. Then you came down to the peasants and the farmers and the untouchables. Well, the untouchables were never able to hear any spiritual knowledge. And the peasants and the farmers were able to hear maybe once or twice a year. So he was teaching everybody. And, of course, that immediately got him into trouble because it meant that anybody could become spiritually liberated. Anybody could free themselves from the reincarnational cycle of being stuck in one class and never moving forward spiritually. So there are two stories about what happened then. There were assassins sent to kill him.
Let me jump in right there, Tricia, and we'll pick this up right after the break, because this is where it gets really interesting for me, too, as well. We're talking to Tricia McCannon about the missing years of Jesus. This is an Easter weekend special. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'll be right back. Stay right there. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Tricia McCannon. We're discussing the lost years of Jesus. This is an Easter weekend. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Tricia McCannon. A little bit later, the Reverend Michael J.S. Carter will be with us. Tricia, right before the break, we had Jesus in Great Britain up to the age of 21.
No. He was in Britain from about the age of maybe 12 or 13. After the bar mitzvah down in Jerusalem, he was there about maybe 1 or 2 years. So he would have been in England probably till late 14 or early 15 years old. Then he went to India.
Kashmir?
There were several places that he was in India, and Kashmir is certainly one of them, and there's some wonderful researchers who've done segments of really great research about the evidence of him being there and so forth and some of his teachings. He really loved India, and he learned an enormous amount in terms of his healing abilities and healing gifts. He really got in touch with those. And as I said right before the break, he was teaching to everyone, old and young, no matter what their caste, and immediately, within a couple of months, had like 5,000 followers. And this was a little upsetting because the response to him from everybody was so strong. And it's like they were so thirsty and hungry for knowledge. And he taught everyone. And so this became actually threatening to some of the more invested secular powers that be, even religious powers that be, just like we've seen over in the West with, the Roman Catholic Church and many other groups. And the Muslims, they kill people that don't, not always, not now, but in the past, they've killed people that didn't agree with them. So they sent assassins for him, and that's kind of where we left in the cliffhanger. Perfect.
Right.
And so he was warned. There are two stories. He was warned by the Magi, and there's another story that he was warned by the farmers and the peasants. But he fled, and he wound up going to Rajagira. And there was a big Buddhist community there up in the mountains, and he lived there for 6 years. And he learned to read and speak Pali, P-A-L-I. That was the language. And he became recognized as the second Buddha by the Buddhists who lived there. In fact, the original Buddha, who lived around 500 B.C., had actually predicted that there would be a second being, a fully realized being, who would come 500 years after him and who would be the second Buddha. And so, Issa, as he called himself and was called in so many places, Issa was recognized as that being. And then he left. He could have stayed there. He could have not done his mission, but he knew that he had a mission. And so he followed the Magi across the Tower Pass and the Silk Road and was initiated in the Mithran mysteries. And those were star mysteries that talk about the cosmos and our place in the cosmos and other extraterrestrial beings and other planets and all of that great knowledge. And then he left and went back to Jerusalem, and he was there around, we have a story of him that the Sanhedrin Council wound up sending someone to interview Mary and Joseph and everyone they could, and also, of course, Jesus, because they knew about the remarkable story that had circulated about him, and they wanted to find out if there was what had happened to that young man. And what's interesting about this story, and it's a historical document, that was reported by the Sanhedrin, is that every town they went to, Jesus had just left. He just left, and they could talk to people about him, but they could never actually meet up with him, which was interesting. And then he wound up going up to Britain, and probably it was 6 months or a year, I think, just to say goodbye to his Druid teachers and to take a break. And the stories of him in Jerusalem before he went, though, he was meeting a lot. One of his best friends was Lazarus and Martha and Mary. And Mary was described as this beautiful, like, 17-year-old girl who hung on every single word that he spoke that that he spoke. And Lazarus and Jesus would lay on the tops of the roofs, which were flat, and they would look at the stars at night and talk. And there were all these stories about what he could do, actually, like how he could talk to animals, how he could tell snakes to, you know, not bite someone. There were also stories about him going to a meeting with rabbis and that were kind of living alone, not so much the people that were the Pharisees in the temple, but how incredibly wise he was.
How can you help me out here on the timeline? How old was he when he left India and went back to Great Britain to say goodbye to his Druid teachers?
He would have been probably 26 or 27, but he went back to Jerusalem first. And that's when those stories about Martha and Mary and Lazarus were. And so he was there about, I don't know if he was there 6 months or he was there a year, but he was there to renew his acquaintances and his friendships with all the people in Jerusalem and Galilee, because I'm sure they knew, you know, I mean, there were legends about him. There were stories about him, and people who really knew the inside story were waiting to see how the destiny unfolded and how it played itself out. So after England, which is an interesting possibility in terms of Mary Magdalene and the marriage and all of that. But see, Mary Magdalene, I know we're going to get into her in the second hour, but she was really Mary of Bethany, which actually the Catholic Church even has said that and agreed to that and proclaimed that until I think 19, you know, they said that Mary Magdalene, as we all know, we'll talk about her soon enough, was, of course, a prostitute, which, of course, was not true at all. That's not at all true. She was from, you know, the well-known family of Lazarus and Martha and Mary, and they funded a lot of Jesus's mission. So they obviously had money, they had property, they had status in the community. So I'm sure we'll return to that. But after England, after going back to Great Britain for 6 months or a year, whatever it was, then he rolled up his sleeves and he went to Egypt. And this is the part that's kind of left out in the Bible. And this is one of the reasons why he couldn't have started his ministry at the age of 30. The earliest would have been maybe 37, but it could have been 40, it could have been 42, could have been 43, could have been 45.
Why?
Well, he was 7 years in study in Egypt. And before he came back to Jerusalem. And there were some very, very good reasons for this. And this had to do with the perfection of certain subtle energy bodies that took a certain amount of training and time. And if he did not perfect those bodies, then he couldn't have done what what Christian stories say he did, which was to basically lay down his life and then transmute his body. And this is a kind of a big conversation, but basically there are nine, all the great mystery schools taught of seven energy bodies. The Egyptian schools taught of nine energy bodies. And it was the mastery of those last two bodies that allowed him to really undergo the resurrection, the crucifixion and the resurrection. And there are stories of Jesus after the crucifixion and the resurrection, where he appeared to like apostles. One is an old man, one is a young boy, one is a man that was about his same age but didn't quite look like he did, who walked and talked with the disciples for a long way, and then when they got to the town they realized that it was him, it was the master, but he didn't look quite the same. So in order to be able to shapeshift and change your appearance, to appear and disappear, as we hear in these miraculous stories from the New Testament, you know, he actually had to master and link up all nine of these bodies. And that was no small feat.
What do you say when somebody responds back and says, blasphemy? You know, that he never, there's no record of him ever leaving Jerusalem.
Well, I would just say that my book on Jesus has 1,200 footnotes and 100 pages of back matter and appendixes. And
right.
I spent you know, 3 years in a very deep cave researching hidden records from the Vatican and India and Egypt and England. And you know, the proof is kind of in the pudding. You know, I take a look at the research. This is not a channeled book. This is not a
right
book. It's a serious book that is a tour de force of the great spiritual mysteries that were all over the world. And most of us know nothing about this, but these great mystery schools were going on for some 4,000 years before Jesus was born and 400 years after he died.
Yeah, and why is it, Tricia, why is it where the orthodoxy, which means, you know, pretty much the straight stuff, right? That's the definition, right? And when you look at that, they don't want to ever think outside or look at some other research or look at other historical data. They don't want to do that, and they would rather stick with this missing time and no knowledge and don't pursue it. And it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think a lot of things. I think that with all great spiritual figures that come into the world, you know, they gather around them a group of people. And the people, the students, the disciples, the apostles, whatever you want to call them, they do their very best to try to understand and grapple with wisdom that is kind of beyond this world. And when the spiritual being leaves or dies, those disciples, with all their misunderstandings and their ego fights, like, you know, we have Peter, the rock, on one side is the bullheaded patriarch, who's the guy that the Catholic Church says we stand on the rock of the death of Peter. And then you have disciples that were far more esoteric, like Thomas and Mary Magdalene and Andrew, some of those guys who were really, you know, the Gospel of Philip, they were more attuned, they were more conscious, they were more aware. And it's just like we have many listeners in the audience, we may have people who really in their heart have always believed that there was a deeper story to Jesus. They didn't know what it was, they didn't know how to find it, but they've always intuitively sensed it, just like I had. And because of that, growing up in the Deep South, you know, I have a very traditional Christian family. My older sister is a fundamentalist Presbyterian, married to a Presbyterian preacher, and they're good people. But in the name of religion, I've seen a lot of bigotry and prejudice and judgment and harm that's been done, you know, not just in an immediate one-on-one family, but in the history of what has happened. And I think that this comes down to kind of what happens is that in order for a religion to thrive in the physical third dimensional world, there are, you know, let us say, business people who become involved, and they're looking at how to charge money and keep their followers and gain more membership and basically establish themselves as an organization or institution. And if the institution tells you, listen, we have a way for you to become spiritually liberated in this lifetime, you know, then take a look, okay? But if those processes really, really, really work, then the people would graduate sort of from the outer level of the religion.
And Tricia, let me jump in really quick, because if he was in Egypt for 7 years, you know, from 28 to around the age 35 or so, are you saying that he was the crucifixion? He was 37 to 40 years old.
He would have been older than that, because let's just say he started his ministry at 37. 3 years into the ministry, that would have put him at 40.
Right.
At 40, he would have been 43. Now, how do we even have any indication of this in the Bible? In the first place, all of us have come to believe the 30 to 33 was, you know, the whole, that's when the ministries happen and the crucifixion happened. The reason we think that is because Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Luke tells us that Jesus appeared to be a man around 30. But first off, we have to remember Luke never knew Jesus. Luke was actually a student of Paul's. And Paul, as you remember, never knew Jesus. He was Saul, the Jewish guy that was persecuting Jesus, who had the, you know, vision on the road to Damascus.
Right.
Eyesight and so forth. And then he became Paul, and he was a Roman citizen, and so he became largely responsible for helping the Romans to eventually accept, you know, Christianity and mold it to something that would not just, you know, vanish as a, you know, a spiritual movement. So, what was your question? I lost my train of thought there.
The age of the crucifixion, because...
Yeah. Okay, so the Gospel of John. The Gospel of John tells us, there's this whole story where Jesus is speaking to some Hebrew people, and he says, "Before Abraham, I was." And the Jews say to him, "Are you crazy, man? You're not yet 50. Okay, that's the other reference we have to his age. Now, that might be something you'd say to a 40-year-old or a 45-year-old, but you would not say that to a 30-year-old. You're not 50 yet, you know. And so, of course, he was not speaking when he said, was before Abraham was. He wasn't talking about his genealogical age. He was talking about the existence of the consciousness that he held.
And so, before we hit this break, I want to get a couple of other points in really quick. What about the other references that have been out there throughout semi-modern history, you know, from 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, and, you know, the early 20th century, about him living past the crucifixion and the resurrection, and traveling the world, again, going back to Kashmir, possibly going back to Great Britain, too, as well. There's plenty of references with that.
Correct, Jimmy. Let me just say, first off, you know, everywhere he went, he used the name Issa. And Issa comes from an ancient name for Brahman, the Brahma, the creator, it means firstborn, basically. Firstborn son. In Hermetic tradition, it would be the Adam Kadmon, the perfected human that was the firstborn creation from the mother and father in the cosmic womb. So, I mean, he was basically an incarnation of that presence. So he used the name Issa. So all through the Celtic Isles where he lived and where he was and where Mary Magdalene was, where his mother was, there are all these names, Issa's chair, Issa's rock, Issa's cave, et cetera, et cetera. The same thing in India. You have all this, Issa's cave, Issa's rock, you know, Issa's plateau, and so forth. And in Egypt, you have the first Coptic church of Issa. Okay, so, you know, this was the mark. The word Jesus is a Greek version that comes from, you know, Emmanuel. And Emmanuel is, again, you know, firstborn. So so the story about what happened afterwards, my book, as you know, goes from really his birth all the way to the beginning of the ministry, and then I don't go into the ministry. So mine is that the Jesus... The Explosive Story of the 30 Lost Years and the Ancient Mystery Religions that took me 3 years to write, with all these hidden documents of the Vatican and so forth that I was working with.
Well, let me jump in. We're going to hit a break. Our guest tonight is Tricia McCannon. We are discussing Jesus and his missing years. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Be right back.